Lando Norris wins for the first time in Formula One. It's victory in Miami for Norris and McLaren. And at the 110th attempt, he's done it. He's won it. And look what it means to Zak Brown.
McLaren have massive momentum. After Lando Norris's victory in Miami, how close are they to becoming a championship-winning team again?
It wasn't like we went from being okay to really good. It was a mess to really good. You know, it's pretty easy to lose the locker room, if you'd like, when you start the season that poorly, whether that's the board or fans or sponsors or the racing team itself. The vision, of course, is to be competing for the world championship, but I feel like we have everything in place. I don't think we're very far away.
With brand new race winner Lando Norris and Oscar Piastri in the cockpit, CEO Zak Brown has what he believes is the strongest driver lineup in Formula One. In fact, he's so confident in the team's trajectory that he feels no need to tempt his close friend Adrian Newey back into the McLaren fold.
We're very happy with what we have. I mean, he's obviously the most successful designer of all time. And as you mentioned, a good friend, we go race cars together. But yeah, I'm very happy with the team that we have. And, you know, it's fascinating that he's left. I think he'll continue in F1. I mean, he loves the sport. So what I can comfortably say is he's not done with motorsports. Where he pops up, who knows?
Hello and welcome to F1 Beyond the Grid with me, Tom Clarkson. Since becoming CEO of McLaren Racing in 2018, Zak Brown has overseen an enormous transformation both on and off the track, capped by Lando Norris's victory in Miami. I recorded my chat with Zak before the race, you'll hear that in a second, but I just had to catch up with him to get his thoughts during the team's post-race celebrations. Well, Zak, you've come to join us. Glass of red. How sweet is this moment?
Pretty awesome. What a great race. I mean, Oscar drove brilliantly. Feel bad he didn't get the result he deserves. Lando certainly got the result he deserves for the team. The upgrades clearly worked. It was just great to see Max pull away. Look, I don't even know how to say Lando pulled away from Max, but he did. And strategy was perfect. Perfect execution. And we earned that one.
Let's talk about Lando now. How much did he deserve this win?
I think it was long overdue for him to win, but it's been long overdue for kind of anybody to get a chance to win. It's great because I think once you get that first one off your back, then the second one doesn't seem too far away. So feet on the ground. It's good that we have been quicker than Ferrari the last two races now because that's who we're trying to catch in the championship. And just an awesome weekend.
I mean, Zak, let's talk about what you think this win will do for Lando. He came close in Russia 21. He's now done it. Do you think the sluice gates are going to open?
Yeah, I think there's something about once the driver's won once, just the second and the third one come easier. You don't have to try too hard. So who knows when that'll come, but getting the first one out of the way was important.
And does this feel different to Monza in 2021? Okay, you won there, you got a 1-2. But the pace this weekend is what stood out.
Yeah, I mean, our pace in Monza, you know, even though Max and Lewis tangled, they were behind us when they tangled. So I think we had the pace that weekend too. But given the level of dominance that Max has had to just beat him outright like that, it's hard to have anything more special than your first win. But that was with Daniel. To have kind of, especially my background, my history with Lando, makes it feel special. And being in Florida, Gilles Deferrin was a very important part of our racing team. He was lived in Florida. So I would say it's a tie as to which one was more exciting. Definitely the two most exciting races of my life.
That victory, McLaren's first since 2021, comes after a sensational turnaround in form and a huge organizational restructure over the past year. Zak appears to have given the team the stability that many of their rivals are currently lacking. Amid a frantic driver market that will completely shake up the 2025 grid, both Grand Prix winner Norris and sprint winner Piastri are locked in long term. Then there's team principal Andrea Stella. Zak says he's an awesome leader who works harder than anyone else. And having signed a contract to keep him in charge of the team until at least 2030, Zak himself is fully committed to McLaren's mission. So are the stars finally aligning for the third most successful team in Formula One history? to return to their glory days, fighting for titles. Speaking in Miami before their incredible race victory, I asked Zach about negotiating with Lando to keep him at the team, whether he'd rather have a star designer or a star driver, and much, much more. I hope you enjoy our conversation. Now, you haven't been on Beyond the Grid for 4 years.
Yeah, a long time.
Yeah, a lot's changed, both in the world and at McLaren. I feel the team is a different beast to what it was in 2020. Is that a fair assessment?
Yeah, I think that's very fair. I think we're a much better team. Whew. You know, Andrea is doing an awesome job now as our team principal, leading the team. We've got great men and women that have been doing great work, giving us a fast race car. We've got two outstanding drivers. I think we've settled on a driver lineup that we're very happy with and will be with us for the foreseeable future. So I think we have now everything we need technically. You know, we've talked a lot about, you know, the wind tunnel needed to come and new simulation and CFD and things of that nature, which are all here. So now it's just about kind of continuing to work together as a team and letting some of these things we have kind of mature and help give us a faster race car.
Is what we're seeing now the vision that you had for McLaren when you joined back in 2016?
Well, yeah. I mean, the vision, of course, is to be competing for the world championship. So we're not there yet, but I feel like we have everything in place to get there. I don't think we're very far away. I think the recovery that the team made last year from the start of the year to the middle of the year was outstanding. And I think that really showed a lot about our team, our character, our culture. I don't think we would have done that in 2020. But we did it in 2023, and it's great to start the 24 season where we kind of left off with the 23 season.
You talk about character, you talk about culture. Can you describe those two things? What is the McLaren way, if you like?
You know, first of all these race teams, our nine competitors, are pretty awesome racing teams. But if I look at the kind of culture that we have at McLaren, it's, you know, very hardworking, which of course you need to be very transparent with each other, high level of trust. I think we have a lot of fun. That's something that I try and instill. And, you know, we all live on the road, working 7 days a week, all sorts of hours. So it's a pretty tough job. It's a very fun job, but a very tough job. But I think you then have to have fun for the kind of 7 day a week grind that the majority of the racing team goes through to be able to kind of enjoy that, work through that, embrace that. We're not literally 7 days a week, every week, but you know, you're always on. You know, it's a very performance driven culture. And I think Andrea, in particular, at least with the racing team, has done a fantastic job of leading by example. But my whole leadership team has done a fantastic job leading by example in the same way Andrea does with the racing team. All those people are leading what is a term Andrea uses, world championship material. And that's what everyone's trying to do in their respective departments to ultimately power our racing team.
What is the Zach Brown way? What is your management style?
I work very hard, very passionate about McLaren first and foremost. And then, of course, all of our racing activities led by our Formula One team. I love the competition. I love the business of the sport. I'm not really a technical person, so I enjoy understanding in the technical part of the sport. But my area of contribution to that is making sure we've got the right people in place, that they have the right situation to be able to perform, the right resources, et cetera. But I'm certainly not going to contribute anything of substance to a technical conversation. And so I feel like my job is just to make sure all my leadership team and their respective departments have what they need, that they are clear on what their goals and objectives are, making sure that it's firing on all cylinders and as high as RPM as possible, but that it doesn't blow up.
So you empower people.
I'd like to think so. You know, it's a huge organization. We're 1,200 people in between all of our racing activities. So, you know, back when I had my own company, I felt like I could do the work of 25 people, but I can't do the work of 1,200 people. And so you have to give up on that idea and actually go, I work for the team. The team doesn't work for me. So my job is, what do I need to give each one of our leaders so they can run their respective lines of the business as successfully as possible.
So you're running McLaren in a different way to how you used to your previous businesses.
Yeah, I mean, my previous business got big enough to where I could still do the job of 25 people, but my old company got up to about 250 people. And then when I sold it, I ran the company that bought it, which was about 1,200 people. So I was used to that size of organization. And then you got to have to transition from being a doer to a manager. I still very much like doing, and I do get my hands dirty quite a bit. But I think it's all about getting the most out of people.
You've just signed a new deal, keeping you at McLaren till at least 2030. Was that a difficult decision?
No, it was an easy decision. You might ask my chairman if it was a difficult decision. But no, for me, I told them, you know, I'm working on a plan that's kind of 10 years out. And I don't think that'll be my last contract at McLaren. I think it's my next contract at McLaren. But if it's up to me, that'll put me 59. So I've already done the math, and I'm definitely not hanging it up at 59. So I could see another 10 or 20 years after that. I absolutely love working at McLaren.
With the new deal, you're halfway through at least the confirmed 10-year. What are you most proud of?
I think last year's turnaround was awesome to see how the team came together. I mean, it wasn't like we went from being okay to really good. It was a mess to really good. And it's pretty easy to kind of lose the locker room, if you'd like, when you start the season that poorly, whether that's the board or fans or sponsors or the racing team itself. Everyone stuck together. And I don't think I don't think we would have got the results. And so having that type of turnaround and now showing up to every weekend with the expectation of being competitive is certainly where we want to be. And but it's tough. You know, you see the grid goes up and down, but we're just going to keep our head down and keep pushing forward. I think ending up with the driver lineup that we have is something that I'm quite proud about, especially when you see what's going on with a lot of the other teams and how destabilized some are and the driver movement. I think to have Lando kind of brought him in before he had his driver's license, and now he's a constant front runner in Oscar, who is clearly a future world champion, and to have the personalities of our two drivers. We've got two nice guys.
Did you get the heads up about Lewis to Ferrari, because you signed Lando just before the news broke?
We actually just announced him. We'd actually signed him at the end of the year, but we wanted to make the announcement with him back. So typically we let our drivers kind of after the end of the year and the team holiday party disappear, and we didn't want to kind of do a paper press release. So I think a lot of people went, oh, just in the nick of time. Reality was he had been signed for a couple months. So we knew we wanted Lando, and we took our option up on Oscar. You know, only a few races in last year, we'd seen enough pretty quickly. It was like, well, why wait till whatever date was in the contract? It was like, no, we want him to stay. So that's a big part of the objective I have with the team is stability, visibility, longevity with all of our people in the team. The drivers are the two most famous and pretty well paid, but just another two members of the racing team.
When it comes to hiring, don't go searching for the one. Just meet your match with Indeed. Indeed is not just a job board. It's your ultimate matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors, and it's on hand to help you streamline your hiring processes to connect you with quality candidates faster. In fact, according to a recent Indeed survey, 93% of employers agree that Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites. So leave behind the days of manually filtering through hundreds of applications, because Indeed does the hard work for you by matching you with the right people for the job from the start, allowing you to schedule, screen, and message candidates all from one place. It makes a usually difficult and time-consuming task so much easier. And if you've ever gone through the hiring process before, you'll know exactly what I'm talking about. Better yet, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use it, the better it gets. Whether you're a small business or a big corporation, Indeed has you covered. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide who trust Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/grid. Just go to Indeed.com/grid right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/grid. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. do you think you've got the strongest driver lineup in Formula One?
I think we do. If you take their speed and their age, their commitment to the team, our commitment to them, the length of the agreement, there's another driver combination out there I'd want other than the two guys we've got.
Let's talk about each of them now. Lando, first of all, he's got, what, more than 100 races to his name. Is he the complete package now, or are there still some areas where you think he can improve?
Well, I think you can always improve, whether you're a racing driver or a CEO or whatever. So I think the minute you think, I'm not improving, you're not being realistic with yourself. I think he is a world championship caliber driver now, but I'd like to think there's always room for improvement. And if I look at when he started, he always had the speed. His first couple of years, he didn't get his elbows out that much. Now he's a driver that if he's behind you, he's coming, but he's very clean, but he's very hard.
Do you think he's under more pressure from Oscar than he has been any other teammate he's had in Formula One?
Yeah, he and Carlos were, you know, very close, you know, from a qualifying standpoint. They were pretty even, but I think Lando came in as a rookie, so he was kind of comfortable being the rookie. So I don't think he felt the pressure. I think it was probably the other way around. Carlos was, you know, 4 or 5 years in, and Lando was putting him under pressure, and they had a fantastic relationship. Daniel didn't put him under pressure much, and I think that probably helped his confidence a lot because Daniel's an awesome racing driver with a huge pedigree, and I think a lot of people thought Daniel was going to, you know, show him how it's done, and it turned out being the other way around. So I'm sure that made Lando feel like, well, he's won 7-8 Grand Prix, and I've gotten the best of him. And then, but to answer your question, the team, Lando, Oscar, it's raising everyone's game. But I think he definitely has a very fast teammate. He knows it, but I think it's healthy.
The reason I asked that question is that there was a period last year, second half of last year, when, you know, I would be hosting the post-qualifying press conference. And Lando was frustrated on a number of occasions because track limits were an issue. I'm thinking of Qatar, for example, where he felt he had pole position in the car and made a mistake. Is that born out of the fact, by the fact that Oscar is putting him under more pressure? That's why I asked.
No, I think in those instances, because I've spoken with him about it, he's just more frustrated with himself that he didn't get. It's not, I made a mistake and Oscar beat me. It's more, I made a mistake and I think I could have had pole. So I think I could have beat 19 other drivers. So he doesn't seem to be very focused on the teammate in particular. He's just more critical of himself if he feels he's left some lap time on the table or made a mistake. But it's not kind of about Oscar in those situations.
Right, let's talk a little bit more about Oscar. Very impressive first season in Formula One, obviously. What changes have you seen in him from last year to this?
He's very confident. He's very quiet. He seems a bit more relaxed, you know, in his first year as a Formula One driver in a McLaren up against Lando. So he feels much more like I'm used to being a Formula One driver. Now his feedback and Lando's feedback is very similar. He's very fast. And the part where he's most impressive is in the high speed corners. He and Lando are very similar, but they have some different driving styles. But when you look at Oscar through the quick stuff, he's brave.
Just like his manager, Mark Webber, who was always quicker than Sebastian Vettel through it when he was at Red Bull.
Oscar's not scared.
Are you getting any idea of where Oscar's ultimate potential lies? Because he's still learning. How good can he get?
You know, first of all, I think Lando is as good as anyone in Formula One. And I think Oscar is the match for Lando. He's not yet what we see now as he can be, but he has some inconsistencies, tire management. But these things just come with experience. So if I look at Lando's first year and a half, Oscar's kind of matched that. So where Lando's really strong is he rarely makes a mistake. His race management is awesome. And what you can see out of Oscar is he can do everything Lando can do. And then sometimes he doesn't, but that's more, I think, inexperience, the lack of consistency, and these tires are pretty hard to manage. So I think he's just going to get better and better and better. And that's why I'm so excited about our driver lineup is I come back to, I think Lando's as good as anyone in Formula One. And I think Oscar's a match for Lando, which tells me I think we've got two of the best drivers in Formula One.
Zach, I love talking to you about racing drivers because I feel you really come alive. Do you love that aspect?
I love the driving side. I still get out and and goof around, and I goof around with them going karting and racing some of the
drove Lando's carts recently.
Drove some of Lando's carts.
How did that go?
It was painful. and so I love it. And I think it's something I've got in kind of common with them, a bit of a bond. I kind of know what they're going through, even though I can't do it as fast as they do it. I understand kind of the preparation, the psyche, the emotions. So I feel like I can maybe speak their language.
You've been through the whole debut thing with Oscar and then, of course, with Lando back in 2019. But how tough is it for young drivers coming in now?
The pressure is immense. I mean, if you remember, Leclerc was in kind of bad shape at Sauber, right? There was noise around, you know, is he crashing too much? And obviously, he's an awesome racing driver and has really matured. And I think he's one of the best drivers on the grid. But I think the pressure that comes in from a young driver is intense, and it's a momentum sport. So if you kind of start off on the wrong foot, trying to recover. So, I look at someone like Alex Albon. He's done an awesome job and kind of rejuvenated his career at Williams, which is great to see because clearly he's an awesome driver. Everyone thought he was an awesome driver. Didn't work out at Red Bull for a variety of reasons, but he's come back. And that's kind of hard once you've kind of mentally been released from a team or not had success to recover from that takes a lot of mental strength.
The reason I asked that question is in the context of Saudi Arabia when Oli Bearman comes in at 0 minutes notice Saturday morning and does a really good job. And so what does that say about Formula One? Is the preparation brilliant of these young drivers? Are the cars too easy to drive? Or actually are the difficulties now for young drivers away from the track, the weight of expectation, that kind of thing?
I think that particular race were a few things. First of all, Bearman did a great job. Wasn't his first time in a Formula One car. I assume probably had some good simulation, was racing that weekend, so he was, race ready. I think the Ferrari is a great racing car, so it was a great car to hop into. So I think it talks about the talent that we have in Formula Two, the preparation. He'd been in FP1s, I think, in a Haas car the year before.
Yeah, a couple of times.
For sure, he would have been a lot of simulator work. Formula 2 cars are very quick. So, and he did a great job. I mean, the way he got dropped into it. And that's a difficult circuit. If you make a mistake, you're in the wall. So he did a great job. So I think it talks about the talent that we've got coming up. And I think you see that in other sport where you get the best junior athletes and they get an opportunity and they come in and they can play with the big boys pretty quick.
I suppose this is an opportune moment to talk about McLaren's young driver program. Who are you most excited about?
Well, of course, I'm going to say all of them because we wouldn't have them in the program. But, Ugo's been someone who's been with us the longest. He's doing a great job. So, we kind of found him out of karting. So that's very exciting. I'm going to watch what I say here because I've got two drivers on the program that I can't remember whether we've actually announced or not. So we have a couple of drivers floating around in some of the junior categories that are part of the team. But it's great. It's important. And I think Lando's someone we found young. Oscar obviously came out of someone else's racing academy, but it just shows that these programs work.
Is your program geared only towards Formula One, or are you looking after all of your race programs?
No, all of our racing. And so we have some of our drivers that have, we've just had Sam Bird, who's been injured, hop in to Formula E test, or will here in Berlin. We've obviously got our IndyCar drivers, Pato O'Ward, who is a reserve driver in Formula One and done some free practice one, and Gabriel, who's in Formula 2. We'll probably put him in the IndyCar at some point to test.
That's Gabriel Bortoleto.
Correct. Yep. So we want to feed all of our racing teams. And I also think IndyCar, Montoya, Zanardi, with Michael, it didn't work out as much. But I think IndyCar is also a great place. You get drivers in Formula 2 that then go over to Super Formula in Japan. And I personally think that maybe IndyCar would be a better home for preparation because IndyCar is unbelievably competitive. So I think they all, also kind of support each other.
What is your plan for Pato O'Ward? As you say, he's done some FP1s for the team. Are we going to see him race in Formula One?
Well, right now we've got two drivers we're extremely happy with.
Would you pay for him to earn his stripes in a different team?
I don't think that's necessary, because I think IndyCar, as we were just talking about, is so competitive. I don't see any reason why I can't continue to race in IndyCar, win us a lot of races in IndyCar, hopefully win us a championship in an Indy 500, on and on. And then if the opportunity presents itself, you know, he's in our TPC, our older test car. He's doing free practice ones. He did the young driver test last year. So I feel he's very prepared to hop into our Formula One car if the opportunity presented itself. I don't think we really need to put him in another team to get a lot more experience, because also, you know, the opportunity might not ever come.
So if one of your current drivers were to go elsewhere, Pato O'Ward would be on your list of potential?
Oh, for sure. For sure. Yeah. Yeah. If something were to happen, and this has been a year of, unfortunately, broken wrists, because we had David Malukas, we've just had to part ways with, because there's still not kind of visibility to when he would be ready to drive, and we need to move on with our IndyCar team. And then Sam, which fortunately is a much smaller injury, if you'd like. So I think he'll be out for a race or two in our Formula E team. So, I don't know what's up with McLaren drivers and wrists this year.
Zach, it's a hugely impressive array of racing programs you've got going on all over the world. Yours is the only team competing to the breadth that yours is. For the Formula One fans watching this, listening to this, who say, oh, are you spreading yourself a bit thin? What's the core business for you?
Well, it's definitely Formula One, but we're in the racing business. But coming back to where we started, talking about leadership team and my role, every single racing team has dedicated resources. So you've got Andrea Stella running the Formula One team, Gavin Ward running the IndyCar team, and Ian James running our electric racing. And that's all they do. So I'm the only one, and some of the people in commercial and comms and kind of that support the teams, but the racing teams themselves are fully focused on their own racing activities. So the upside is there's learnings. We have some team members that have gone from the Formula One team during the budget cap, you know, where we had to adjust, that have gone to the IndyCar team. I've got IndyCar drivers, Pato O'Ward, who serves as a reserve driver. We've got sponsors that are on our IndyCar team that then joined our Formula One team. So there actually are a lot of synergies, but there are definitely no distractions, because the people that would be distracted aren't, because they're only focused on their single discipline.
And one of those guys, we've mentioned him a few times, Andrea Stella. Can we talk about him a little bit more? What impresses you the most about Andrea?
His leading by example, his thoughtfulness and his communication, his transparency. He's not political. He's a team player. And so if I kind of play that out, what does that mean? No one works harder than Andrea. He listens to people. He listens to their perspectives. He's very thoughtful. He takes everything on board. He communicates his direction and decisions very well, explains them. He doesn't just say, okay, I heard you, but go do this. He'll, you know, I heard you, but here's what I'm thinking, and here's why we're going to do it this way. He has a very performance. He's kind of not interested in anything other than performance, so he doesn't get distracted by a lot of the other activities that maybe some of the other team bosses do. You know, just wants to go racing. He's very calm. So when you put that all together, he's an awesome leader.
How important is it to have an engineer running the Formula One team?
I think very important, especially kind of the makeup that we have. You know, these teams are so big now. You know, the old team principal role was run the racing team, deal with the media, the partners, the et cetera. I take a lot of that work off Andrea's plate so he can be very focused on the racing team. So I think the best makeup, at least the best makeup for McLaren, is a CEO TP role as opposed to the traditional TP role, because I think the sport is so big now and there's so many aspects to it that you talk about kind of spreading yourself too thin. You know, if Andrea took all of the media commitments that I work on or partner commitments, he wouldn't be in every single debrief, but he wants to be in every single debrief because that brings performance and focus. At the same time, if I was the team principal, something would have to give. So I think the scope of the role now of running a Formula One team actually kind of takes a couple of people.
We had him on the show last year, and I came away from an hour of talking to him thinking I'd had a lesson in how to go motor racing.
That's kind of his communication, right? He's very, very simple. You know, there's no kind of trickery or fancy worries. He's just, you know, inspiring and motivating. And, you know, when he's done talking to you, he's getting stuck into it and getting on with it.
The impact he's had is clear. And you know, let's look at the progress the team has made in the last 18 months. So why didn't you promote him back in 2018 instead of Andreas Seidel?
Yeah, we actually kind of spoke about it. He felt he wasn't ready at the time, I think. And so we didn't promote him. He didn't want to be promoted, but he then got a bigger role. And then even when promoted him this time around, when I called him, it wasn't an immediate yes. It was, let me reflect. Let me, he reflects. He's very thoughtful. He thinks. And so even then it was like, well, tell me more. And what do you think? When do you think I'd be good at it? And he's very, you know, kind of looks in a mirror to see what do you think my strengths and weaknesses are. So I think he felt he wasn't ready in 2018. I thought he probably was, but, you know, he certainly turned out to be ready now.
Selling a little or a lot. Shopify helps you do your thing however you ka-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business, from launching your online store to opening your first real-life shop, celebrating hitting a million orders and beyond. Shopify is there to help you grow and reach your goals. It doesn't matter if you're selling custom clothing or personalized prints. Shopify helps you sell everywhere. With their all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, you can reach customers wherever they are. And with Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from wherever you are. I love how empowering Shopify is for business owners, giving you total control over your brand by allowing you to customize your online store with their stunning, flexible templates. And it's filled with powerful tools like Shopify Magic, their AI-powered all-star, helping you sell more with less effort by streamlining your operations and enhancing the customer experience. In fact, Shopify holds the record for the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, helping you turn browsers into buyers like nobody else. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the US and is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. So don't miss out. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/beyondthegrid, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/beyondthegrid now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/beyondthegrid. We touched on it at the top of the show, but do you feel you now have everything in place for McLaren to win the world championship? I'm talking brain power. I'm talking facilities.
Yeah, I think we do. You know, you're always fine tuning the machine. You're always investing in more technologies, but there's nothing that's like on the to-do list that isn't kind of normal course of business, where, you know, the to-do list was, you know, need a wind tunnel, needed some big stuff. The team we have in place, of course, we're doing a little bit more hiring. You're always kind of looking to improve, but I'm very happy with our technical leadership team, our commercial, our finance, you know, all the elements that go around. So yeah, I think we have what we need. We just need to continue to move forward as a team.
Happy to the point that there is a man called Adrian Newey on the market.
Heard of him.
Yeah, you heard of him. He's actually quite a good chum of yours, isn't he? Happy to the extent that you wouldn't approach Adrian Newey to see if he was interested?
Yeah, no, we're very happy with what we have. I mean, he's obviously the most successful designer of all time. And as you mentioned, a good friend. We go race cars together. We're going to go do the Monaco Historics next week. But yeah, I'm very happy with the team that we have. And, you know, it's fascinating that he's left. And let's see what he does. He's been doing this a long time. I know Eddie Jordan kind of works with them and looks after them and said, look, don't expect them to just jump into something new tomorrow. And I kind of take that at face value. I think Adrian's going to go enjoy Monaco Historics next week and take some time to figure out what he wants to do.
What do you think he'll continue in Formula One, if not at McLaren?
I think he'll continue in F1. I mean, I think he loves the sport. I think he's definitely not done, so I'd expect him. You know, he's doing the track car. He obviously did the Valkyrie. He's talked to me about he'd love to win Le Mans. You know, he was, a lot of people might not know, he was at IndyCar. That's where his relationship with Bobby Rahal when he was running Jaguar came from. So I think he likes IndyCar. So what I can comfortably say is he's not done with motorsports. Where he pops up, who knows?
Well, there's a sports car program going at McLaren now. Do you think there's any chance, even if he doesn't join the Formula One team, he could get involved there?
Well, never say never. It's not a conversation I've had with him. You know, we're currently running GT3, so that's really out of our automotive business and wouldn't really require, because it's a road car, production-based race car. So I think, of course, he'd add value to it, but it's not the same that I think he's used to, which is getting his pen out and drawing a race car.
God, when you're dreaming, is there an LMP1 program in you?
Oh, I'd love to do an LMP1 program, LMDH or LMH. We're the only team who's ever won the Triple Crown. I'd love for McLaren to be racing at the same time in Formula One, IndyCar, and the World Endurance Championship at the highest level. It's great we're now in GT3 with our automotive business. But that would be the ultimate. And then, of course, you know, Formula E didn't exist back then in you know, sustainability and electrification and modern technologies are very important to us. I'm very happy we're in Formula E and Extreme E. I think that fits well with the McLaren brand.
And when you are putting the jigsaw together of what you need to win, would you rather have a star designer or a star driver?
Well, ultimately, you need both. I don't think without a star driver, you're going to win. So you need both. First, it does start with the car. I mean, the best way, people ask me all the time, is a car a driver? And it's like, well, it's both. But I think the way I characterize it is I think there are 6-7 drivers on the grid that would be world champions in the Red Bull. And as great as Max is, and he's one of the best ever, I don't think Max wins the world championship today in any other car other than the Red Bull. But then when you look at the difference, and Sergio Perez is an excellent racing driver who's shown on his day, can run with Max, but look at the difference there. So I think you need both, because as Formula One gets closer, and Max is doing such a special job, but look at what's going on from P2, P3, P4, P5. One day we're P2, next day we're P5, and it's all moving around. So the cars are so close that that's when the driver's going to make the difference. So you need both at the end of the day.
And in terms of facilities, yeah, you've got the wind tunnel. I did want to ask, what about a test facility, a test track? You know, Ferrari's got Fiorano. And I remember back in the day, Ron Dennis, when he was running McLaren, had a conversation about buying Lyddon Hill, I think, in Kent. I mean, is that even on your radar, given all the different programs you've got?
Yeah, today it wouldn't make sense because of the testing restrictions.
But you've still got so many other programs that could utilize it.
Yeah, from that standpoint. I think there's enough great racetracks around the world. And you know, you also want to, if you're just at one track, then you're kind of limited to that track's characteristics, where if it's something that's, you know, high-speed aerodynamic, you might want to test it one track. If you're having tire wear issues, you might want to go to Jerez, which is really hard on tires. And then, you know, of course, you get into England, you know, the weather becomes an issue. So I think you're better off picking different tracks that you want to test at, depending on what kind of car you have and what type of problem you're trying to solve.
Now, clearly, you're a big picture guy. You're running all of these different racing teams. What do you see as the main challenges facing Formula One as we go forward?
A couple years ago, and I'm very happy about this, my biggest concern was around sustainability, because I think we as a sport hadn't done a great job of communicating our sustainability credentials, how important it is to us, and how much advancement we're making. I think McLaren has led the way. And there's a lot of data to back that up, to say that we have. And we produced our first sustainability report a few years ago. We were the first team to do that, to talk about where we've been, where we are today, but more importantly, where we're going. And I think with how big of a topic sustainability is to corporate partners and people that aren't that familiar with Formula One would kind of think Formula One engine, that doesn't sound very sustainable. What people don't know is, you know, we've been hybrid for a decade. We're the most thermal efficient engines in the world. We're using bio and going to full sustainable fuels, et cetera, et cetera. And then also sustainability isn't just about emissions. It's about safety. These cars are this, you know, unbelievable, the crash structures and the innovation and how that makes it onto the road car. Now, I think people are recognizing it's a benefit to be in Formula One and to build your brand around how sustainable Formula One is and the developments that we're making. So that's no longer the concern that it was. I don't really have any, knock on wood, any big concerns. I don't see why the sport's not going to go from strength to strength. A few years ago, not having the budget cap, that was a big concern because you had teams, McLaren was one of them, in financial trouble because there was no cap. So you'd have the big OEMs who could afford and justify, because of the returns that Formula One provides, to spend a fortune. So it became a game of how much can you afford to lose to stay in the game. And the gap was getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And so you were seeing Williams sold and, you know, Aston Martin, which was Force India in receivership, Sauber in big trouble. So you had a real risk of the grid. Here today, now we have teams knocking on the door, trying to get in and aren't successful to get in. You have people that want to buy teams and teams don't want to sell. A lot of investors coming in. So I think that was a huge concern, but that's been solved by the budget cap. So I now sit here and go, every team is financially healthy or has visibility to be healthy. The grid has never been closer, less than 3% from first to last, even though we've got Max winning every race. So that's kind of, people go, what do you mean? It's never been more competitive. But last year was the first time ever. I think we had five teams with seven or more podiums. So the competition's great. We have a demand for more races, right, that than we can do. We're at our limit, but yet there's countries knocking on the door. We could do 30 races if we could fit them into the calendar. So the demand's there. And it's an exciting sport that, you know, media continues to cover in great new innovative waves. You know, Netflix has done wonders for the sport. We've got Brad Pitt movie coming. So that's going to be for those people. You know, I think we all watched Top Gun and it's the same director and producer and we all wanted to be a fighter pilot. I think Brad Pitt's movie will have that same impact of, you know, I want to be Brad Pitt and a Formula One driver. So I just see nothing but great stuff coming down our way. I think we need to work on our calendar a little bit. I'd like to see us be in Asia a little bit more, but I think we're going to have to get into rotating some races because we can't go beyond the 24 that we have.
You mentioned team investment a while ago as well. I did want to ask you about the Bahraini's involvement in McLaren and how that has changed in the last few months. Can you just tell us a little bit more about that?
Yeah, so that's more at the group automotive level. So Bahrainis have always been, you know, for the last 20 years, the majority shareholders of McLaren Group. McLaren Group owns 100% of McLaren Automotive and then owns 70% of McLaren Racing. And then there's MSP Sports Capital that owns 30%. There were a variety of shareholders, smaller shareholders that sat inside McLaren Group and Mumtalakat, which is the Bahrain investment team, really want to drive forward the automotive business. And they felt the best way to do that was to make another significant investment, which meant that they bought out the other shareholders so they could have very clear visibility on direction of travel of where they want to take the automotive business, which is they want to build it to be much more awesome than it is today. The cars are unbelievable. So Michael Leiters runs the automotive business. I run the racing team. We both report to Paul Walsh, our executive chairman, and ultimately into the board. And so we, you know, kind of operate as one company, but two separate businesses.
Would you like skin in the game? Would you like to be a shareholder?
Who says I'm not? No. I've got plenty of skin in the game. We'll leave it at that. I'm definitely, I'm well taken care of. And I'll enjoy the successes with McLaren, but you know, I think we all have skin in the game, and they take care of us. You know, the owners of McLaren are the best owners in the world. You couldn't have a better board, a group of shareholders that are committed to our success and give us what we need to be successful. So it's a really happy environment.
McLaren is currently third in the Constructors' Championship. Are you always going to feel a little bit dissatisfied until you're P1? Or do you get satisfaction from what you're achieving now?
No. We're satisfied with where we are today, given kind of the quest that we're on. But no, the goal is to win the world championship, win races. So it's not easy. Been a while since we've done it, but we're bound and determined, and that's what we're going to do.
Zach, it's been brilliant to have you on the show again. Thank you very much. If I could just ask you some quick fire questions.
Fire away.
New for 2024. First one, what else are you good at?
Oh, there's a lot of things I'm good at. Golf, not really, but I love it.
What's your handicap?
13.6, which isn't terrible.
Does that make you better or worse than Lando?
I'm definitely better than Lando. Ice hockey, baseball, and I still like to race. So I like playing sport.
Which racing driver, dead or alive, would you like to be stuck in a lift with?
Oh, that's an easy one. Ayrton Senna.
It's the 30th anniversary. Where were you? What were you doing on May the 1st, 1994? Can you remember?
Oh, yeah. I was watching the race in Woodland Hills, California. A broadcast used to start at 4:50 in the morning. So I was in my house, on the couch. He won his last race on my birthday, November 7th, in Australia the year before. But no, I remember I was at the race when Dale Earnhardt was killed, unfortunately, in Daytona. So I think these are moments that stick with you. Obviously, Roland Ratzenberger had his accident on the Saturday. He was teammates with my best mate, Richard Dean, in racing in Japan. So I didn't know Roland myself, but I'd heard a lot about him. But no, I remember Senna's accident like it was yesterday. I kind of remember almost since I started watching Formula One, everything, but then, you know, something like that happens. It's so tragic. You remember it. I also remember my first F1 race, which was the 1981 Long Beach Grand Prix, which I still have the race program. And I remember meeting Eddie Cheever. He kind of signed the program and flicked it to me at the end of the race. I think he'd finished fifth, and he was big news because obviously being an American. So I remember it all.
So you and Ayrton are stuck in this lift. You're waiting for help. What one question would you ask him?
Ooh, that's a good question. I'd probably ask him something about what was it like working with Ron. I mean, that was a legendary era and combination for me. I was always a massive admirer of Ron Dennis and McLaren and Senna. I started becoming really a Formula One fan in about 87 when Senna was driving for Lotus, and then he went to McLaren. Then they had the MP44. Senna and Prost dominated, and McLaren was kind of what we're seeing today from Red Bull, and that just made such an impression on me. And not in a billion years would I thought I'd be sitting here talking to you, working for McLaren. So those are very early memories that I'm very much still to this day in awe of. And I know all the things that now go on in a Formula One team kind of behind the scenes. I'd love to have been a fly on the wall, you know, when Ron and Ayrton were negotiating in 93 on his race-by-race deal, those types of things. And in fact, our lawyer, Tim Murnane, was there then, and he's pulled out for me some of Ayrton's contracts from back then that I've read. And it kind of puts the hair up on your neck. I have Ayrton's 1991 Monaco winning car that I got when I joined McLaren. And so I pulled out that specific contract, and it was just kind of a pinch-me moment to go, fortunate enough to now have my favorite racing driver from my favorite team that won the most iconic race, and then to kind of look at the contract, it just kind of brings you back to what would have gone on in that conference room. So I think it's pretty cool.
Very cool. Who would play you in a film?
Well, there's one actor dude that everyone says I look like. I can't remember his name.
Brad Pitt.
No, not that guy. It's another guy everyone says I look like. I used to get Michael Anthony Hall all the time. You'll have no idea who he is. He did Breakfast Club. Who would play me? I don't know. Someone who's got a lot of energy. Michael Douglas. He's a McLaren guy, and he just did Ben Franklin, and he looked like Ben Franklin. So he doesn't really look like me, but you never know with today's Hollywood he could pull it off.
Who is the coolest person in your contacts?
That would probably have to be Albert Pujols. He is one of the best baseball players of all time. St. Louis Cardinals, my team. In this role at McLaren, you get to meet a lot of really cool people.
Did you meet him recently?
And we'll see him. He joined us in Abu Dhabi, and he's a total legend and someone that, you know, I've only seen on TV 100 times. I went to the London when the Cardinals played the Cubs, met him there. Turns out he's a Formula One fan, so we've created a good relationship, as have with a lot of other the sports that I like. So that's a lot of fun. But Pujols is someone that I kind of hold up on a pedestal as like, this guy's, you know, top five baseball player of all time. And that was my sport growing up.
Finally, who would be your first guest if you hosted a podcast?
A racing?
Could be anyone.
George Washington.
Zach, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Now, by the way, Zach, I would love a sneak peek at Senna's McLaren contracts as well. Zach's enthusiasm for McLaren is infectious, isn't it? His energy is driving the team forward, and while it's taken him a while to get the team's ducks in a row, the Woking squad are now devastatingly effective. Think what they've achieved over the last 12 months, culminating in Norris's win in Miami. It'll be fascinating to see what the team can achieve over the remainder of the 2024 season. Zach, it was great to have you on the show again. Thank you for your time, and I'll see you again soon. Now, please let me know what you thought of that conversation with Zach through all the usual means, as you did after last week's episode with Bruno Senna. I really enjoyed catching up with Bruno. And Andrew Walker summed up many of your sentiments with this. Ayrton said Bruno was better than him. I think Bruno should have had the Honda drive in 2009, which became Braun. It's quite possible he could have beaten Jensen to the title had Honda not pulled out and Ross Braun hadn't gone for the steady hand of Rubens Barrichello. Well, just imagine that, a Senna winning the world title again. Thank you, Andrew, for the note, and thank you to everyone who wrote in. I'm really glad you enjoyed the show. Well, that's almost it for this week. Don't forget that F1 Nation's review of the Miami Grand Prix is out now. I'm joined by McLaren team principal Andrea Stella, Formula1.com editor Greg Stewart, and F1 Explains presenter Christian Hugill. I'll be back next week with another great guest from the world of Formula 1. But for now, thanks for listening. Beyond the Grid is produced by Formula One and Audioboom Studios. Until next time, keep it flat out.